It's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
And welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I am Gene Bolduc, your host, and I am joined today by my cat, who has just climbed up the back of my chair. Yes, it's the Weekend Water Cooler at Home Edition. My cat, who likes to climb the back of my chair and then change position by digging into my back. So if I let out a scream, it's because of that, not because of our guest and our wonderful senior politics correspondent, Penny Rich, chair of the Orange County Commissioners. Penny, good morning. I think it is still morning where we are.
Yeah, good morning. I know this airs in the morning sometimes, so let's say good morning. Yeah,
we'll say good morning. Yeah, we'll say good morning. And for the afternoon where it airs, you know, look, whenever it airs in the afternoon, or even in the evening, I think it's on at 8 p.m. one evening over the weekend, it's morning somewhere.
So somewhere.
Look at it that way. It's probably somebody's waking up on the beach in Maui listening to the Weekend Water Cooler saying, what's the problem? Of course it's morning.
Right.
It's always, you know, it's always morning in Maui. I miss Maui. I've only been there once, but it's enough that I miss it.
Yeah, there you go. But you know what? You do notice that the sun is actually trying to come out today after 4 days of torrential downpour.
It's still up there. It's still up there.
It exists. It does.
It does. Yeah. There's actually evidence. We'll talk a little bit about evidence. You know, evidence. Remember that from school?
Mm-hmm. Apparently,
you know, I think it's kind of making a comeback. You know, what do you think?
Well, I think evidence, facts, and truth are all sort of trying to make a comeback. So, yeah, I think that's true. Yeah.
You know, yeah, that could happen. I mean, the thing is, it takes time, but, you know, they'll wear you down, these things. They stay with it. They don't go away.
That old
expression about facts are stubborn things. I think facts invented stubborn.
Yeah. You know, it's also making a comeback, science.
People believe in science. Cool anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like science.
Well, you know that great Neil deGrasse Tyson quote about, you know, the great thing about science is that it's true whether you believe it or not. I like it.
Boy, you know? Wouldn't that be great if we can get our leaders in the federal government right now and some in the North Carolina General Assembly to understand how important it is to believe science. Wouldn't it be great? Yeah.
Well, you know, but you know that they always did. They always did, and they really do anyway. They know better. That's the problem of all of that political nonsense with, you know, with is climate. Do you believe in climate change? No. The believe thing is the part that gets hold of me. Believe that's it. It is not an article of faith to believe in science,
right?
It's a matter of, do you understand the science? Do you have confidence in the science? That's a fair assessment, but it's not a matter of do you believe, or it's not Santa. You know?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so, I totally agree. Yeah. And good point. Yeah. We need to understand why things happen. And if you are not a believer, you will never understand, right? That's, you know, this whole believe thing. I agree. It's an interesting way to start the water cooler, Gene.
Well, you know, it is because it brings me right to my broader theme of, I saw a doctor this morning on television, was asked a question about, you know, a classic cable news question, which is, it's Memorial Weekend, you know, what's your advice to the public with regard to wearing a mask? And this guy's a distinguished epidemiologist. And he says, well, yeah, I don't give Memorial Weekend advice. Okay. I mean, look, I study issues of public health and the transmission of dangerous diseases. That isn't topical to the 3-day weekend calendar.
Right.
and he went on and explained that he cannot give answers that are binary, yes or no, about should you do this, should you wear a mask and do this, should you not wear a mask and do that, because this situation is really not one that brings you to that kind of decision making. He said, so for example, if you wear a mask, you have mitigated a certain amount of your risk. It's mm-hmm. hard to say how much that is. It depends on where you're wearing it. And if other people are wearing it around you, if you're wearing a mask, but somebody with COVID is coughing and sneezing all over you, well, you're really not very protected, are you? Because it's on your hands and, you know, you might touch your face and so forth. So he said something that I've heard all my life because my dad is an actuary. We're not really talking about yes or no. We're talking about risk and about right. managing your risk, which we do every day, all day long. So for example, if you're going to cross a busy street, you can do it, but you have to manage your risk of getting run over by a car by looking both ways before you cross.
Right.
You want to check the conditions and give yourself the best chance to get to the other side of the street. And that's exactly what you're doing. And what you teach your children to do from the time they're very young, you tell them, don't touch the stove, it's hot. Now,
right.
you know, if Donald Trump is your child, then of course he immediately puts his hand right on the stove and does it five times.
Right. Because, or looks up into the sun during an eclipse.
During an eclipse. Yeah, yeah. Because he wants to see
right.
it.
I mean, gosh.
Yeah. He wants to see it, right?
Right. No, but you know, you make this is a really good point, right? We're all, because we talk about masks a lot, let's face it. You know, there's some folks that think that you know, we need to put it down on paper that we are requiring everyone to wear a mask. Well, I mean, at some point as adults, we all need to understand that wearing a mask in public when you're going into a store or grocery right. store is an important thing to do. If someone right. has to put it down in writing for you to do it, it's the same thing that you just said about crossing the street. Do you need instructions on how to cross the street?
Well, I mean, there is jaywalking, right? Which is a violation of how to cross the street. But,
right.
you know, that's a matter of, that's for your safety and for everybody's safety to allow you to have a fixed place to cross the street. But
right.
you can't, if you're going to cross I-86, North NC-86, you know, near but not right in front of A.L. Standback. You're familiar mm-hmm. with that road.
Sure.
There's not a crosswalk for you. You're not going to get charged with, you're not getting charged with jaywalking there. You might on Franklin Street, because there just are simple, obvious reasons that need not be explained why you should have designated areas to cross in a busy downtown area, which you don't have on country roads. These are things that are just simple and obvious to understand. And it's what his argument was, which I completely agree with, is we need to step back away from the idea that it's either completely constrained, everything shut down, or everything's wide open. We just don't live in that world. We never really did. We
yeah.
never really did.
Yeah. yeah. And you know, that's again, important. You know, people are talking about this herd immunity and, you know, let's open everything up and yeah, we're going to have to sacrifice a few lives, but let's open everything up. Well, no, I mean, we're not actually anywhere close to doing something like that. And we can
right.
look at Sweden as an example. Sweden is a poor example right now, if you want to look at herd immunity. And, you know, if you do look at the science, you need to have some sort of way to cure the virus before you can ask everybody to get exposed to it. That is
yeah.
the key factor that people are missing when they're talking about this herd immunity. And, you know, it's concerning because we have people that are pushing real hard to open, yet they're not thinking about all of the consequences when they say that. And, you know, it's just, I think we have to have a whole lot more of this kind of conversation, crossing that street and understanding your right. risk.
Right.
When we talk about opening up our community.
Yeah. And I'll come back to that in just a minute. We're going to take a quick break, but I'll come back to that crossing the street question. I have a little story of my own about crossing the street that'll probably put the hair on the back of your neck going up, but it's true. So, you know, it has that benefit at least. We're talking with Penny Rich, Chair of the Orange County Commissioners, and you're listening, thank goodness, to the Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. We're back with more Penny Rich, but you know, the fun we have during breaks, you don't want to know. It's not suitable for broadcast sometimes, you know? So here's my hairy story about crossing the street. Back in the day, I worked at the Travelers Insurance Company and in downtown Hartford. And I have a genetic condition of subluxing patellas, which is a fancy way of saying that my knees would dislocate. My kneecap would pop out and pop right back. It comes right back. Mm. My younger son has the same thing. And this was correctable really only with a fairly substantial surgery, which I had not had yet. And I was crossing the street. So, you know, Hartford's a city and I'm dashing across the street to get into work on time, carrying my coffee and whatever. And because I know that I have a bad knee, it turns out I really had two, but I only knew about one at the time. I allowed myself a little extra time before I would make that risk management decision to dash across the street. And so this particular time, it was a good thing because my knee dislocated while I was running across the street, and I ended up, along with my coffee, on the pavement. But fortunately, Ouch. Did not have a city bus following Ouch. Close behind to run me over. So, you know, yeah, there are good reasons to have crosswalks, for one thing.
Yeah,
but also that's kind of my best example of I knew that I had this added level of risk because if I would choose to try to run, you know, maybe my knees would be sufficiently stable that I wouldn't place my foot in the wrong position, and maybe it would be okay and maybe not, and so I allowed the extra space.
Sure.
It's like if you know your brakes aren't so good, you don't tend to tailgate.
Right. Right. And so, you know, this is the thing though, also, if you're a vulnerable person, and you're worried about, the COVID-19, which you should be, right? I mean, there's a lot of reasons you should be, right. then maybe you need to, if you're afraid to be in a grocery store or in public, maybe you need to get other people to do that for you until you can build up that feeling of comfort. Right. And so, I mean, it takes all of us when we're in something like this, it just, again, I'm going to use the crossing the street. It also takes the car needs to be looking out for people that, like you, who are running across the street who may not make it. Right. I mean, you don't accelerate. You slow down when you see someone running across the street.
Right. And that affects my judgment as a driver too, because I'm like, you think you're okay, but I'm slowing down anyway.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I get it. I think that, you know, I keep telling everybody we're building the plane as we're flying it. Right. We have not ever been in this circumstance before. And so, you know, just all these different things that you need to require and you need to put on people, we have to step back and we have to let people make their own good judgments as well. I mean, it is your life. You need to be mindful of what you're doing. You know, I do not go into any retail shop or grocery store. Well, I'm not retail shopping at all, I'll tell you that right now, but I have to go grocery shopping, right? This is something I need to do. I put a mask on and I expect everyone else to have a mask on in there. And when I see someone without a mask on, I just move as far away from them as possible. I mean, I don't respect that. I think you should be wearing a mask, and I don't want to be anywhere near you. So I am going to move as far away as possible. Now, I mean, you know, luckily you can do that in the grocery store, right? There's room to do that. But there might come a place where you can't do that. And so, you know, we need to be mindful of that as the retail shops open. What does that mean? Do you really need to be going shopping right now? Maybe you do. You want to help support our local businesses. I think it's not a bad idea, but just be mindful of what's going on in the store as you walk into it.
Yeah. And actually, you know, the thing that, we've always done this. So this isn't a revelation to us, but you know, our idea, of managing some of that is, you're not running out to the store with rare exception to go, but you're not going out there, you know, to buy some salt. You're going out to buy a list of things that you need.
Right.
And you want to try to make your trip as efficient as possible so that you only have to go once a week, maybe twice if you're really out of something that you need. But otherwise, you know, it's like our parents, Penny, would say, you know, make do. I mean, just, you know, sort it out. Consider it an episode of Chopped where you open the refrigerator and you say, okay, well, here's what's for dinner. I wonder what it's going to be. we just start taking stuff out of the refrigerator saying, you know, there are no more days left on this green pepper. So whatever we're having for dinner is going to feature this.
Right. And, you know, also in my day job as being a personal chef, I've always been a real efficient shopper, right? Because I want to get in, I want to get out, and I want to start cooking. And so for me, this going into the market and watching people just sort of moseying along, that's not a place to have a social interaction. It really isn't. And now even more so. Get in, get out, get what you need, move on, right? This is not, it's not, and that's some of the problem I have with like the granny hours, you know, the 7 to 8 o'clock in the morning when all the grannies are there.
Watch it.
It is the only time that these folks can get out, but get in the store and get out of the store. This should take up your whole morning. You don't have to read the ingredients on your green pepper.
Oh my God. Have you been following my husband around? Because this is, I'm telling you, this is just ringing such a bell for me.
He goes to granny hour.
I'm right at, first of all, yes, he does. He did from the second they started that, but he's doing that because, you know, he's next week going to be 72 years old. He's in excellent health. I mean, except that he almost died last year, but you know, he's in excellent health.
There's that. Yeah.
But I mean, that medical issue was resolved. Thank you, Duke. Thank you again, Duke. So, you know, he's doing the hours so that he can mitigate his risk. But he does, and he's been meticulous actually about finding the best arrangement that fits us the best about ordering stuff from a grocery store or locally that they'll do the shopping for you and bring it out to the car. And that all you have to do is have the hatch unlocked so that they can open it up, load it in the car. You know, the first time we did this, he tried to give the person a tip, and they were, and I said to him, you know, I bet you they're not going to do that because come to think of it, I wouldn't touch your $5 bill if I, you know, if I didn't have to. I mean, it's not worth it's not worth getting sick. So I bet they won't. So don't be too insistent. And if they behaved exactly that way, they were like, no. So these systems are coming together so that you can put a gratuity into your online payment in advance. And I just don't remember the last time I touched a dollar bill of any denomination in the use of cash. I just haven't touched money that way in months. And, you know, I mean, people really don't pay attention to money the way they should for
well, you know,
about follow the money, that's contact tracing right there.
Right. No, yeah. Well, it's interesting though, right? Because I have no cash in my wallet right now. I normally like to just keep a few bucks in there just in case I need it. But I don't even think about that now because everything is
right.
I just want to pay with my phone. I don't even want to take the credit card out of my wallet. I just want to tap my phone up to whatever computer that might be there. But think about that a couple of years ago. We didn't have that, right? So someone wait a second.
Even the last couple of years that we have had it, we've been very concerned, which is legitimate, okay? This is, again, about risk management. We've been very concerned about, everything is makes it so easy to spend your money with barely touching anything and barely looking at it, barely thinking about it. That all adds up to making it easier to spend money, right?
Yeah.
And that tends to make people spend more money. And retailers know this, of course.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. Yeah,
I mean, bars invented this by running a tab for you, right? So
exactly, because so you just add a side, add a
how much. Yeah. You're going, oh, my God, who ordered this scotch? $80 a shot.
Right, exactly.
So that's the thing. Retailers have been long aware of the easier you can make it for people to spend money, the more they'll spend on it. And, of course, a lot of us have been very concerned about privacy issues with doing a lot of online transactions and so forth. But now the risk of a hack or of a privacy violation is easily dwarfed by the risk of contracting the virus. So we've been doing all this risk management. We just haven't thought of it that way, I think.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Good point. It's a very
What do I know, Penny? What do I know?
You're very smart. That's why I come on the show with you. I enjoy the conversation immensely.
And I enjoy the flattery. So we're gonna come back and we're gonna drag more out of Penny Rich's brain about the local issues that Orange County is up against and decisions that are upcoming and have recently been made, whatever they might be. I don't have anything in particular in mind. Well, yeah, I probably really do. But anyway, you're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill, and we're going to be right back. And we're back with more with Penny Rich on the Weekend Water Cooler Home Edition from my desk at home with my cat trying to attack me at any given moment. And Penny, who is God knows where, because I don't have her, I don't see her video. So, and you don't care because you're listening to this on the radio.
That's right.
So Penny, let me start with this. The Orange County government's website has a wonderful COVID-19 dashboard, which has all of Orange County statistics. I think it also feeds into the statewide, right? The state statistics.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, this kind of goes back to what we're talking about science, which is, you know, you can watch somebody on the news and hear them say, we're flattening the curve, or the cases are better, or the cases are worse. But the fact is, that if you see the data, then wow.
There
it is, right?
Yeah, and it should be eye-opening, exactly. The way that you said that, you were like, wow, the data, yes.
Yeah, and you know, come on. It, you know, there's I promise only to spend 30 seconds on this, but there's an element of our society that is looking at that saying, oh, well, but now if you go into the hospital and you've sprained your ankle, you're going to be logged in as a COVID patient because the hospital will make more money on that. This is complete nonsense, nonsense. And so why bother? These are people who it seems to me, no matter what the factual situation is, they're going to make up something much more interesting. And this has all, this was, 'twas ever thus, I guess, is the way of saying it. This has always been the case. We just see it more now. We can, it's more visible in our society because of social media.
That's right.
And especially when you have the leader of the free world republishing crazy things. But then we come back to, you know, public health records and legitimate data, which most of us understand, is where the rubber meets the road here and what we're all watching. And our situation now versus the middle of March, when this was, you know, really, really scary, I think, is that now we have data. And now we know some things. We are seeing trends, and we're also seeing, you know, it reminds me actually of poll numbers. We always see these top level poll numbers, and most people never see the entirety of a poll. When I was in journalism school, journalism students have to participate in the Carolina poll, which is done every year that the journalism school participates in. And they ask, you know, if the election were held today, you know, would you do this or that? Mm-hmm. That's true. And that's what gets all the publicity. But they ask about 40 more questions.
Right.
So, you know, and these are all tabulated in what they call the crosstabs in the poll. And if you dig into those, which Tom Jensen does, I think, probably on a regular basis.
Amazing.
With Aaron Keck. I mean, he is such an amazing guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, those things can tell you some pretty amazing stuff. And now, because we have some more data, now the CDC knows that there are almost no cases. In fact, I think there are no cases of, I should never say no cases.
Yeah.
There are almost no cases of anybody contracting the virus from an outdoor setting.
That's what the CDC is saying, just by touching
the surface. Right.
Yeah, they're saying that. I mean, the CDC is having some issues on their own right now with flubbing some of the data and information that they were getting and report. Not that they flubbed it; they were reporting it in two different ways, and so some of that was misleading, right? But what if we could just go back to what we're doing on the Orange County webpage, which I think is a great idea. And we're not updating it daily like the state is. So, because, I mean, we just don't have as many people working for us, and the health department is really, out there right now trying to do strike teams and trying to make sure that people are getting tested that need to be tested. And then also taking care of other issues. We're forgetting people do have other medical issues that need to be seen by health departments and hospitals and whatnot. What this does show us, though, if you do go to the website, you can go to the Orange County website and click on the coronavirus tab, and it'll take you right to the dashboard, Gene, that you're talking about.
Right. It's impossible not to be able to find it.
Right. It's pretty easy to find. And, you know, what it shows us is something that pretty much that we've known. I mean, it starts out with, you know, confirmed cases by age. And you could look at that, and that's kind of fascinating in itself. But then the very right next to it is a confirmed cases by race. And if you see, if you take a look at that, you have Black or African American is 31% of those cases, and then white is the next category, is 46%. Well, you know, it's other and unknown, and of course we do have a lot of unknown or people that are not putting their race down. So that data is only with what people supply us, right? But it's not, you know, people say, well, you know, they're still more white people are getting than black. But that's not what's really happening, because if we have an 11% or a 10% African-American population in Orange County, but 31% of the cases are black and African-American, wildly disproportionate. And, you know, we kind of knew this going into it before we started tracking the cases by race and ethnicity. Because the right. people that are in some of these high risk jobs
right.
that are essential workers,
exactly.
That were in the congregate living places, were people yeah. of color. And, yeah. you know, that's where the high exposure is in Orange County. That's where 37 of the 39 deaths are in Orange County.
Right.
So, like you said, the data is real and it's eye-opening, but it's not, it wasn't unexpected, let's put it that way, when it came to the race confirmations.
Right. And you know, to oversimplify this, but I heard a young black man talking about this, and he said, you know, if it's making white people sick, it's going to kill us.
Right.
And, you know, he's exactly right. There's just no escaping that reality.
Right.
And that was true 6 months ago.
And a lot has to do with the fact that North Carolina has not expanded healthcare for everybody, and so you know if you have a job right. or if you're in that sort of middle class category, you can afford healthcare. What about all those right. people that can't? And so you know there's a lot of factors here, but you know it's just scary to think that we're not paying attention to the health needs of everyone in the state, not just people that can afford it.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say this virus is proving so many things that we know.
Right.
But I didn't mean to interrupt.
It's the same for me. What's striking to me is it's like pouring water over cracked pavement. The water didn't create the cracks, but it sure will show you where they are.
Yeah.
So, you know, this particular part of our response as a society and as a healthcare system. If you had told me in December that there was going to be a pandemic that would threaten the United States, I could have told you easily that these were the kinds of problems that it would reveal, would bring into sharp relief, because they're mm-hmm. inescapable. The failure of so many states, including our own, to my embarrassment, to expand Medicaid is a big part of this issue right now, and it's clearly revealed by all of this, which brings us to what we're going to talk about when we come back, Penny, which is what the opportunities are that are presented to us by this
yes.
once in a lifetime, God we hope, terrible event, worldwide yeah. event, and what are the good things that can come from it, because we want to end on a good note every week, yeah. as you know.
Sure.
We want to.
We try.
It's never a lack of wanting. Okay, we're going to be back with Penny Rich, and we're going to come up with something great, I promise. Listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. And we're back with our final moments with Penny Rich. Penny Rich, you know, Penny Rich, who has the best name in all of broadcasting. I know you know that, but you know,
yeah.
you're like George Bailey being the richest man in town. you have the richest name in broadcasting.
It is a great name. I love my name. I just, you know, as much as people make fun of it, and I've heard it all, Pound Foolish, Nicole Poor, you know, I've heard it all. I just love it. You know, when you tell people your name is Penny Rich, they stop a second to actually
think about it. They just have that moment of going, like, yeah. really? They just yeah. go, really?
Is that really your name? Yeah, tell them.
So,
honestly,
you know what you need? You need a little wallet-sized card that's laminated with a picture of your mom,
yeah.
the wonderful Jackie Rich, yeah. and a quote, you know, like a meme, and a quote yeah. that says, "Yes, I named my daughter Penny Rich," signed yes. Jackie Rich.
Jackie Rich. Right?
put a little, you know, mother's seal of approval on it or something.
Right.
And you should just walk around with that and either have have them printed up into business cards that you can just hand out, or have it laminated like a, you know, like, or yeah, have it like a, you know, sturdy, like a credit card that you can just say, yeah, okay, I've had this question before. Here you go.
Here you go. Let me help you with that before it goes any further.
My grandfather had these wonderful cards printed up. Boy, this is off the rails already. My grandfather had these wonderful cards printed up that he would give out to people if they, to kids mainly, if they were whining. Okay. Yeah. And here's what it said. This is just a white business card with Times Roman text. That's no design. That's all it was. And here's what it said. Your story has touched my heart. Never before have I met someone with more troubles than you. Please accept this token of my sincerest sympathy. That's it.
Bum. Bum.
You don't want to get that card.
No.
You don't want to get that card from. Yeah, he was a school teacher. I bet you would have guessed that.
Yeah.
He's heard every story a kid has, believe me.
Yeah.
The dog ate your homework. This is what you're coming
sure
to me with.
Right.
So let's talk about the good things that can come from shutting down the world for a few months in the way that we have. It occurs to me that air quality is the first thing that comes to my mind after seeing all these pictures from all over the world of clear skies in India and in Beijing and so forth. And my question is going to be, first of all, it puts to rest permanently the climate deniers' argument that reducing these emissions, you know, that this is all a hypothetical on our part. And no, it isn't, because here's what happened when people had to stop driving, basically, and there was something like, I don't know, what was it, a 70 or 80% reduction in driving. How do you reintroduce that stuff?
Well, that's good.
That's where the burden needs to be.
That's right. Not only reintroducing, you know, the airborne chemicals from all these plants that are going to start firing up and opening up, but also it gives us an opportunity. And there was a great op-ed that was in the NNO, I think yesterday, by Kim Hunter, who is an attorney for the Southern Environmental Law firm. And it was about... are we going to introduce these cars back onto the road? And why would NCDOT continue to widen roads to allow more cars on them? What is the point of that now that we know that we could do better? You know, we could be smarter. We know that it makes a difference. The air is cleaner. People could breathe. We're seeing animals that are walking down city streets, which we've never seen before, which is kind of interesting, right? Because there, you know, I know there are people are complaining that there's more deer in the Chapel Hill Carbor area now. Yeah, that's because they're not getting hit by cars, and there's not that many cars on the road.
Yes, you know, and a lot of them are in my backyard.
You know what also is happening? You know, we were doing budget yesterday, last night, and we were talking about calls to the police departments have gone down. Less people are driving. There's less car accidents.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, you can measure all this. You know, we talked about data in the last segment. This data is going to show us that, you know, if there's so many, if everybody's not out on the road driving, there's less accidents, more people are going to live. You know, if we're not stressing out our police and fire departments as much, how do we turn this into understanding those good behaviors and keep doing that? You know, that's really the lesson. You can't go back to your old behaviors. You have to understand, you know, for 3 months we did this. It wasn't such a hardship.
Right.
You know,
right.
We could do
right.
it. We could do it. It's like when you're pregnant and you can't drink coffee for 9 months. You know? But you do go back to drinking coffee, but I mean, you could do it, right? There are things that you could do that you didn't know you could do before that we absolutely have to keep up. And good behavior, I think, is being a good steward to the environment. I think that is absolutely true.
And so many people now know, and employers know, that they can be productive working remotely. And I think that this is, you know, good news and bad news. It's really, really good news. If you're someone who lived in New Jersey and commuted to Manhattan every day to go to work, and now it turns out you can do about 80% of your job from your extra bedroom in your house, and do meetings remotely. And maybe you need to go into the office occasionally, but you don't need to be there every day. That's all that driving back and forth you don't have to do.
Right.
But it's also just the sheer stress of that. Now, that's all good news for that worker. But the fact is, if you own that building in Manhattan and you've been leasing that building to companies to use as office space, and it turns out that 60% of them don't really need to do that anymore, like all Twitter employees are not going to an office now, and that's forever. That's not to whatever forever means, but that's a thing that's going to, I think that's going to be a very big shift in how America works going forward, because there's just so much lost to your personal life and your work life by going back and forth to a building. You know, our society built its working life model on a manufacturing model.
Right.
And we're just not manufacturing anymore. And now we've had this opportunity to step back. We've been forced to step back, take a deep breath and say, wait a minute, do we need to do it that way? Really? Because
and we don't,
why are
we
spending all that money on rent for an office when the employees can, we can give them a laptop and, and have them work at home. Maybe we pay for their internet access and their laptop, and otherwise they're working at home and we're not paying for all of that stuff.
Right.
And that could be good news for the companies. It's good news for the workers. And it's maybe not so great news if you're the landlord of that commercial building. So that's something to be watching too.
Right. But tie it back into the environment though. It's good news for the environment when people don't have to commute and get in their cars and all. And so that's important also. And another good point is that, you know, folks that had some sort of physical disability that couldn't necessarily commute, but knew that they could do the job. They just couldn't get to the job. They now have that opportunity to be able to have that job. And I don't think we get rid of the office entirely. I just think we get rid of the large office, because there might be, like you said, you could do 80% of the time. Maybe one day a week you need to go into a space, a shared space, and work. And that's fine too. But I do think that, you know, the upside of this is we're going to see a complete shift on how people are able to work. And it's a good thing. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. Now, there is some sort of social part that you miss out when you're not in that space with your coworkers. And I understand that too, but I think that, you know,
that's
all
a
that
trade-off.
Can work itself out. Yeah.
That's how you mitigate risk.
That's
how
right.
you mitigate risk. Right. Is that that's worth right. driving an hour each day to commute to a job? No. Nobody who works in that environment would say that that's worth it.
No, I mean, it's just not.
I think it's going to change the footprint of a lot of businesses. And unfortunately, Penny Rich, our footprint is that we're still a one-hour show.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we're going to have to wrap it up. But, you know, you'll come back and see us very, very
soon,
I trust.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we hope everybody will, you know, stay safe out there and wear a mask and be like Penny Rich. Go out running and try to enjoy your life.
That's right. Thank you. Some exercise and wear your mask.
Thank you, Penny Rich.
We'll
talk to you again soon, I trust.
Thank you, yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good weekend.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.